invite me to a foreign country. Canada is a foreign country. Okay, so I want to talk of this embeddability problem, which has been a problem which is a very old problem, been around for 40-odd years, really, and has interested many, many analysts. So this talk is a new viewpoint, but in the, at the same time, I'm not going to tell you any estimates or anything. I don't want to talk about estimates this early in the morning. And it's also, since the audience probably has not seen many aspects of this problem, I want to also make it a little bit historical. Okay? So, this is a joint work with Paul Young and Hung Min Chiu. And there is a central theme that runs in this project. So this is just a part of some project. And that is, there is a very close connection between four-dimensional conformal geometry and three-dimensional CR geometry. The CR, incidentally, stands for Cauchy-Riemann. And so such a viewpoint is not completely new. There is work of Pfefferman and his student Robin Graham, Pfefferman and Kendo Hirachi, and also you find these things happening in string theory, what is called ADS-CFT correspondence. I'm not going to say anything about it. So I want to now define certain things. So you have now a manifold of dimension 2n plus 1, but this is just at the beginning. In the rest of the talk, it will all be 3D, because that's where the problem is. And it's going to be a smooth orientable manifold. And so what we have there is this vector subbundle of the complexified timing bundle, CTM, and there are three properties. The first property is that mu intersect mu bar is zero. The second property is this formal integrability condition. So for us, this is obviously trivially satisfied, because mu is going to be one dimension, which is in dimension three. And so you see that the complex dimension of mu is n. So this mu is called the Cauchy-Riemann bundle. Now what you do here is that this is an assumption here, that you take H, which is the real part of this guy, so it's a vector space, and you look at the orthogonal, so this orthogonal H-perp here, this H-perp, is going to be the space of one form. And I'm going to assume that there is a non-zero section of this. Okay, and so this non-zero section is a real one form, which I'm going to call theta. This is a very important object geometrically. And from this, you define like a dot product. So the dot, you have to be very careful here, because this dot product is only defined for vectors in mu. So there is a missing direction. Okay? Because you see, this is 2n plus 1. This is one dimensional, this is n dimensional. So there are 2n, so you are not defining the dot product for some other vectors. And so this is this guy here, this dot product is called the Levy form. Okay? So now on, from now on, my n is 1, so that means 2n plus 1, so you have 3-dimensional. And our manifold will be compact, no boundary. It's very crucial. And we are going to assume that this Levy form is positive definite. This is called the strongly pseudo-convex case. So given this theta, you choose a vector field T. So those of you who work in Heisenberg and so on, this capital T is ddt. You'll see that when I talk of examples. So I'm normalizing this so that this is one. This T is called the Rebbe vector field. So those of you who are interested in some symplectic geometry and all this, this is the Rebbe field, Rebbe vector field. Okay. This conjecture of Weinstein, the Rebbe vector field as periodic orbits, this is the contact geometry, this is that guy. Okay, which Tobbs recently solved, that is that guy, Cliff Tobbs. So I make a framing of my tangent, complex tangent space here. So you have Z1 bar, okay, which is the bar of that belonging here, and T. Okay. So this is what is called the holomorphic tangent vector field, this is the anti-holomorphic tangent vector field, and this is the real vector field T. And corresponding to that, you have the dual frame, theta of T is 1, theta 1 of Z1 is 1, theta 1 bar of Z1 bar is 1. And this form, this is called the contact form, satisfies this condition. So this will be the volume element. When I do integration on the manifold, this is going to be the volume. Okay. Like you have, like for example, if you compute this for Heisenberg, you are going to get dx dy dt for that theta. Okay. See, I have an abstract manifold, and I want to realize this manifold. This is embedding. Okay, so here's another way of thinking of it. So here is your d theta. And so this is given now, we are in three dimensions, so this is given by a function, this is the Levy form thing. My assumption is H11 bar is positive, strongly pseudo-convex. So I can choose my Z1 bar, so that this guy can be normalized to have length 1. You just divide it by a certain factor depending on the point. And so then here is your contact form, okay, which is considered not zero. This will be the volume element. Now there's another way from the complex analytic viewpoint to think of CR structures. So what you do is you have this, these planes. This is a two-plane, right? This is a two-dimensional thing. So this plane, so this is called the contact plane. And what is the contact plane? It is the kernel of theta. H is the kernel of theta. And on this contact plane, you are defining an operator J square equals minus I, which is called the almost complex structure. Okay? And nu is the plus I eigenspace of that guy. And minus nu is the nu bar. The eigenspace, nu bar, is the one that is corresponding to minus nu. So actually, if you go and look in the Wikipedia entry for contact geometry, you're going to see what these contact planes are doing in the Heisenberg group. And they don't stay flat like that. They twist. As you move along, they are going to twist. So the reason is that you have this condition which is very far from being an integrable structure. You're just on the other side, very far away. So in the classical Frobenius theorem, you have the bracket condition equal to zero. So the real vector field span some sort of manifold. Here, we are very far away from, you know, the bracket is dbt. So you're failing integrability in a very bad way. So obviously the contact planes are turning as you move around. And you will see this picture. So and they don't say it's Heisenberg, but it's actually Heisenberg. In that very simple example. Sorry? I don't want to. It's not worthwhile. Okay. So the CR structure, from my viewpoint, is a triple. So you have a compact manifold, you have a contact form, and on the contact planes, which is given by the kernel of theta, you have an almost complex system. And so what we are going to do very often is we are going to deform the CR structure. So you should not think of deformation as, you know, taking something like something elastic, pulling it. That's not really what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that I'm not changing theta. I will change theta in the sense of modifying it by a conformal factor. So the kernel of theta is going to remain the same. But on the contact planes, I'm going to change J. The complex structure on each contact plane is going to change. That is all I'm trying to do here. Again, if eventually I want to change the contact, I want to change the CR structure. So this is what I mean by deformation. So, for example, this way of putting things you will find in the book of Kodaira. But he's talking there of complex deformation. Now comes a very fundamental fact, and this is by Sid Webster, who made a very important, significant contribution. This is pushing the ideas of Cartan. So in 78, I think it's part of his thesis, in fact, under Chern, he defined a connection on CR manifolds. So here is your, remember the theta 1 bar, which were dual to z1 bar. So he defines this. This is like the structural, Cartan structural equation. And here is this connection. But now comes something really nasty and bad, which you don't see in Riemannian geometry. CR geometry, you have this thing, this guy here, which is the torsion. And in any computation of CR geometry, it is hell. If the torsion gets into the way, if you have zero torsion, great, then it looks like computations work like Riemannian geometry. If the torsion is non-zero, it really, really makes things very hard. Now, in addition, and the problem point is that you can't put conditions on the sign of torsion. It doesn't make sense. How can you put, you can say curvature is positive or negative, but you can't say torsion is positive or negative. It's stupid. So, in addition, he defined a curvature. Okay, so we are in dimension 3, so this guy is going to be a function. Just like when you're in Riemannian geometry, you're in dimension 2, you have Gauss curvature, which is a function. If you go higher up in the dimension, then this becomes a full-fledged tensor. Okay, so this object here is called the Tanaka-Webster curvature, because independently in Japan, unknown to people here, Tanaka came up with similar construction. Why was Webster interested in this question? Well, Webster was interested in this question like you have two domains. You want to understand whether there's a biholomorphic map between the two domains. If you know for the polydisc and the ball, they are not biholomorphic to one another. It goes back to Poincaré. So this question can then be reduced to the boundary, because these CR manifolds are, in a sense, to be thought of as boundaries of complex manifolds. So on the boundary, then you want to understand the mapping properties between two CR structures. Can you go from one to the other? So he's trying to define invariance of the CR structure this way. That is the main reason. And he uses this to show like the egg, like the ellipsoids and various balls are not biholomorphic and so on and so forth. So this is, I think, an extremely remarkable piece of work. This is a great paper. Okay, so in this entire subject, you will see that somehow, in some form, it has attracted the attention of some extremely great analysts. In fact, some of the analysts whose names we have heard in other talks like Calderon. Okay, so let me go to some examples. So one such example, which I think a lot of you like and love, is the Heisenberg group. So here is the contact form. Now you see, if you take theta wedge d theta, you're going to get dx, dy, dt up to a factor, 2, 3, whatever. So this object is this manifold is not compact. It's not a compact manifold. And it is the boundary of this Ziegler upper half plane. And here you see the Z1 bar. This is the anti-holomorphic tangent vector field. It has this formula. So some of you look at x square plus y square and Hormander and so on. That's just the real and imaginary parts of this Z1 bar. You take the real part of Z1 bar, you get x. Take the imaginary part, you get the y. Okay. Now, it turns out that if we compute Webster torsion for the Heisenberg group, it's identically zero. Okay. And Webster curvature is zero. So as far as Heisenberg group goes, it's Webster flat. It's like Heisenberg group is the analog of Rn, if you want to think of it in CR geometry, because everything is zero. There are other examples which you, like if you want to take hypersurfaces in Cn plus 1, and there is this notion of the Levy form in terms of some what is called the defining function, and if this is this defining function is positive definite, then they will be strongly, what are called strongly pseudo-convex, and you can do the whole thing. Now, you can create manifolds of negative Webster curvature. So you take your favorite Riemann surface, your high genus, sorry, some genus. Okay. And then you take the tangent plane, and you take the tangent plane, and then you attach to it. So the tangent plane is two-dimensional, right? Two-dimensional surface. So now you look at vectors of length 1 on the tangent plane. So essentially, at each point, you are taking S1 cross M. So at each point. So this is called the unit circle bundle. And you can put a contact structure on this. And obviously, because the base is a Riemann surface of high genus, it is hyperbolic. So curvature on the base in the holomorphic tangent direction, you would expect to be negative. In fact, constant negative. So this way you can create manifolds of constant negative Webster curvature or negative extra curvature by looking at the circle bundle on Riemann surfaces of high genus. So typically you are supposed to think of CR manifolds arising as boundaries of complex manifolds in CR. Now, for my purposes, there is another extremely important example, three sphere or odd dimensional sphere. So this is going to play a very important role for me. And so what I want to point out here is that the contact form for that, this is written out for the three spheres. So here, if this U is zero, okay, U is zero, this is the defining function of the three sphere. And this is how you form the contact form. And this guy here is the holomorphic tangent vector field. This is the CR vector field here. Right? So, and then there is V1 bar. And if you compute, then this theta 1 is dual to Z1. Theta 1, the duality bracket between theta 1 and Z1 will be 1. And if you compute further, that with this choice of theta, the Webster curvature is constant, and with this theta that I am given here, it turns out it's constant and equal to 2. So this is, the sphere is an example of constant positive Webster curvature. And it's also an example where the torsion is 0. Okay? So this I'm going to refer from now on as the standard CR structure on S3. Okay? All right. So I'm sorry for those of you who know these things, you know, and have lived with it for many years. I mean, I apologize. Thank you for it. I've been probably fed this since God knows when. Okay, so now I want to introduce certain differential operators on a CR manifold. And this is what really will play an extremely important role. So the first operator is the d bar b operator and d bar b and db operator. So what this means is, remember, we had these holomorphic tangent vector fields, z1, v1 bar. So you create this one form. So db is going to take a function, phi, and create this one form. Okay. So these operators were introduced by Joe Kohn. I think he was the first one, right, who looked at the d bar b and db complex. And this is an important operator because essentially the kernel of d bar b. So if the d bar b is naively, suppose this manifold were sitting inside Cn, and you took the complex structure of Cn and sort of restricted it to the boundary, so then the d bar in the complex structure will restrict to d bar b on the boundary. This is essentially the story. And so, in other words, what I'm saying here is that those things which are annihilated by this thing, d bar b of phi equal to 0, those phi are what are called the CR holomorphic functions. Okay. Now there's another operator which obviously has to enter into any complex analysis, Kohn's Laplacian. This will play again a very fundamental role for us. So this Kohn's Laplacian I have written, and you might have seen this with another term here, but I've ignored that term because it's acting on functions. On functions, Kohn's Laplacian just looks like this. This is a very dangerous operator, very far from being elliptic. And there are directions where it fails to be elliptic. And this creates a huge amount of problems and has occupied the interest of many, many eminent people, some of whose names will figure later on. Okay? Now all I want to tell you here, and as far as we are concerned, is that this Kohn Laplace, we are on a compact manifold, okay? No boundary. So this Kohn Laplacian is non-negative. That's pretty easy. Just some formal integration by parts. This is maybe not that easy. It has point eigenvalues. And because, there's some buzzword for that. So the buzzword is, since people already had talked about classical symbol and so on, the buzzword is this. So if you know what this is, Calderon, Weiland coat, and so on, fine. If you don't know, don't bother. I'm not going to talk anything more about estimates. So that's the buzzword. So you have to use this guy somehow, do something. you can show that it has pointed. You can't just use some Fred Ohm or say Gilbert-Schrödinger and you're done. It doesn't work that way. So the unfortunate thing is that these eigenvalues, they have there you see the non-elliptic nature. They have a limit point. So they are positive, okay, but you could have a limit point of zero. This is something that we have to deal with eventually. So, and then finally comes the main actor of the day, finite operator. Now this guy is has an analog in Riemannian geometry, and it's a remarkable operator. It's fourth order. Okay, you can see it's fourth order. Now you will see some remarkable property of this in the next slide. But for the moment, I just want to say that this is fourth order, and look at this. This is Z1 of f, so this may look second order. Unfortunately, here there is a t square, you know, the ddt. So if you want to really think, here's box B. So box B actually consists of two parts. It consists of this sum of squares operator, xi square plus yi square, which is the real and imaginary parts which all of you like to look at and play and games with Harnack and so on and so forth. But unfortunately, it has this guy. Okay. So you see, this guy is dangerous, because and then when you take dd bar, you're going to get something like t square, which is second order. So it begins to start competing with this term. So it's a dangerous object there, but it has some very remarkable properties. So the first thing is actually this operator is real and symmetric. See, the viewpoint I'm trying to eventually establish is that results of this type, you cannot just focus on analysis. You have to bring in a very serious geometry to understand some of these problems. And this guy has the right properties. So it's the discovery of this sort of operators in the last 15, 20 years that have played a very important and very striking role in conformal geometry. So for example, the analog of this operator in four-dimensional conformal geometry plays a very important role in what is called Q-curvature. So here are some properties of the Panisse operator. So the most important property I am really looking at is non-negativity, because it turns out that non-negativity is actually a CR invariant function. That is, if you take the contact form, okay, you take this contact form and you make a conformal deformation. So H, the kernel, is unchanged. The complex structure is unchanged. But you are using a new contact form to understand the CR structure. You have modified the contact form. But now look what happens for positivity. Here is what Hirachi observed, that the new Panites and the old Panites are related by means of this conformal factor. So exactly like what happens for the Gauss curvature equation on S2. Or the Gauss curvature, you know, minus Laplacian plus 1 changes conformally. Or minus Laplacian plus scalar curvature, how it transforms conformally. Same thing happens for the Panites. This is how the volume transforms. It's a simple calculation. So this is equal to this. So if I assume non-negativity of the Panites, it will be non-negative for the new guy. It's an invariant. So CR invariant. Other conditions, you know, you change it, they will change. This one does not change. This is what I want to emphasize. It's also a fact that when the torsion is zero, you can directly check that the Panites is non-negative. So non-negativity of the Panites will be an important condition for us. Now, it turns out something very surprising. There is a paper of Robin Graham and Jack Lee in Duke Journal. And in this paper, at that time, you know, Panites was not really a buzzword, but they have an operator. Think a little bit about just the Panites in higher dimension. They show that in dimension 2 and higher, the finite is always non-negative. So it's obvious that in three, so in three dimensions, so this is 5, 7, 9, in dimensions 5, 7, 9, and so on, finite is non-negative. In dimension 3, n equals 1, 2n plus 1, non-negativity is actually a condition. It's not a priori given to you for any CR structure. It may happen, may not happen. Okay? So this is something I want to keep in the back of my mind as I proceed. So here we are concerned with global embeddability. So what is global embeddability? So we are given an abstract, compact, strongly pseudo-convex manifold. So there is some manifold here. Some manifold. And I want to embed this as something in sitting in Cn. And how do I want to embed it? By choosing functions which are holomorphic. Okay? This is how I want to embed it. By choosing, the embedding functions have to be the one-to-one, on-to, differential, and so on and so forth. They have to be holomorphic. So why? Because I want to say that the CR structure, which is being inherited here because of this manifold sitting in Cn, is the same as the CR structure here. I want to realize it like an honest-to-goodness guy. Now, it turns out that if you have a strongly pseudo-convex manifold like this, so there is something, a variety that spans it. It's a complex variety. And this complex variety need not be smooth. So there may be spikes here and divisors. So this is a problem of algebraic geometry. And this is a deep result of Harvey Lawson. So there's something here. For strongly pseudo-convex, there will be something here. But in general, this variety will have singularities. And one of the questions I have is, how do these singularities, what are these singularities in relation to the boundary finite? Is there some relation by Green's theorem or something? Is there some way of attaching a numerical value to these algebraic or complex analytic singularities and relating it somehow to some index or something of the finite operator on the boundary? This would be an extremely beautiful and deep connection. Okay, so previous results. So the first result in global embedding is Boutet de Mauvel. He said that in 5 and higher dimensions, all compact complex, strongly pseudo-convex manifolds are globally embedded. Then comes a very important result of Jocon. So Jocon proved that global embedding is equivalent to one of these three properties. So either D bar B has closed range, either box B has closed range, and some functional analysis will tell you this is the same as saying that instead of having a limit point of zero here, the eigenvalues have a lower bound. Some functional analysis. Okay? So the idea here is that you have to use a box B and manufacture lots of point separating holomorphic functions. Some estimates and involved stuff here which I don't need to get into nitty-gritty details. Okay? So this is great. I mean, it's a beautiful result. And so, but it's not invariant condition. The geometer will say, look at this and say, not that I'm saying I'm a geometer, but for many applications, you know, this is not really an invariant condition. So I want to know what is going on. Now, let me give you another very famous example, which goes back to the 60s. So, I was told by Siu that this example is actually due to Graud, and then he referred me to his paper with Andreotti. And you find that they, in the Andreotti-Siu paper, they talk about Graud. But everybody calls this the Rossi example. So I will call it the Rossi example. Really, it should be called the Graud example. So what is this example? You can see how delicate embedding is. You take the standard structure Z1 bar, okay? You change it by adding plus tau, this is a constant of Z1, the holomorphic vector field. So now this is a new CR structure on S3. So manifold is S3, but you haven't changed the contact form because theta of this is still zero. You've only changed the CR structure. See, if you take theta of Z1 bar T, it's theta of this plus theta of that. Theta kills this, theta kills that. Okay, so this is still in the contact plane. This new guy is still in the contact plane. He just changed his yesterday. Turns out this does not embed globally. Any tiny amount. Why does not it embed globally? If you read Ross's paper, it's complicated. But the right place to read the proof is the book of Mei Chi Shao. And what you do there is do a computation using spherical harmonics. And you find out that any CR function for this new structure, okay, using spherical harmonics, is actually even. It has the same values at antipodal points. So how can you use CR functions to embed? Because two points going to the same point. You cannot. So, however, locally, if you take a little piece of S3 with this structure, it does embed. Globally, it fails. Okay? So there is also the local embedding question. So I don't need it because I'm here interested in global embeddability, but here are the local embedding theorems. So, 9-dimension and higher, 9-dimension and higher local embedding holds. Okay? Supposedly holds, okay? So, and then 7-dimension local embedding holds. And Nirenberg constructed a very beautiful counterexample in the early 70s that local embedding in general fails in dimension 3. And generically, so if I have local embeddability for one structure, I make some neighborhood of some function there, okay, so you remember the tau, instead of the tau I put a phi, make a small deformation, then local embedding will fail, generically. This is a result of Francois Threads. Problem of local embedding is open in 5 dimensions. And if you want an exposition of this proof of Nirenberg, I think the best exposition is in his NSF-CBMS lecture notes. It's a calculation. And the construction is actually extremely beautiful. And it's also tied in with the famous problem of local solvability, on which Calderon-Bailenkov theorem, Beals, Pfefferman, Treves, and Nirenberg. These are all tied in, the Hans-Levy operator. It's all related to box B, D bar B, all these things. So these are all tied in questions, especially the local version. So the last object I need is the CR Yamabe constant. And it's defined exactly like in the Riemannian case. So remember I had this contact form theta and I made a modification. So how do you define this Yamabe constant? So you take the Webster curvature, you integrate it with respect to the new volume form coming from here, and you normalize it by the volume so that the total volume is 1. And you take the infimum over all theta 1 in the same conformal class, in the same conformal class as theta. So obviously this thing does not depend on the choice of contact form because you took the infimum there. So you change the contact structure, the Yamabe constant will not change. For that given theta, Yamabe invariant does not depend on which contact form you choose. It's the same. Okay. So the question is that now I have all the ingredients, so point is, what can I say about embedding? So we have on one side, remember the work of Jopon. Okay. And then you have all these Rossi examples and so on and so forth. Here's the main theorem. You see, you take the Panaitz operator, which is non-negative, and you assume the CR structure, the Webster curvature is positive, you have immediately a sharp bound on the first eigenvalue of box B. So it means, you see, if the Panaitz is non-negative and the Yamabe constant is positive, there is no limit point of zero. Therefore, box B inverts. So therefore, you are at close range. And therefore, the embedding theorem. Now, you see, what I find very amusing about this result, and this result is sharp, achieved on the standard theory. You compute this will be 2, remember? And this is a direct check for the standard structure box B. It's in spherical harmonics, it's 2. So this achieved. You can't do better than this. What I find interesting about it is that torsion is not there. See, this is the great danger. There are a lot of theorems people prove with torsion this, torsion that. But this looks exactly Riemannian. Okay? Torsion is not there in the formula at all. And it's a very simple formula, inequality. Okay? Now, I also point out that if the Yamabe constant is positive, then I can take my contact form, modify it by a conformal factor, and get a new contact form for which R is positive. By modifying it conformally, this condition does not change, as I explained to you by Hirachi's transformation law. So if this is true, you can force this. So invariant way of stating embeddability is that this too means that globally embedded in some CN. This is a very geometric way, and this is in the same principle, that what is the principle? If you want to deal with low eigenvalues of an operator, coming from geometry, then always the geometry is important. If you want to look at high eigenvalues, the statistical information, then you start doing pseudo-differential, whatever it is called. So, Weyl's law. So there is the less geometry. The low eigenvalue geometry becomes superior. You have to deal with it, you can't escape it. Okay, so you may ask me, well, what is happening here? So, first thing I want to say is, in the Rossi example, as you let this parameter tau go to 1, the scalar curvature actually goes to plus, the Webster curvature actually goes to plus infinity. And and obviously that means the Panites is negative, because if the Panites is positive, it embeds as a contradiction to my theorem. My theorem is false. Right? If you can make an exact calculation and see, the Panites become very negative. Even so, you make a tiny perturbation, immediately the Panites goes negative. Also, notice that if you look at this result, I said Jack Lee and so on prove Panites is non-negative in higher dimension. So that's not a condition anymore. So if the Yamabe constant is positive, which is true in so this will be a condition like in 5 and higher dimensions always, then you will have embeddability. The Yamabe constant is negative, actually is better. You always will have it. So you recover in the same Bhutan's result. It extends it. Now, one question that has occupied many people, certainly not, it's not an original observation of mine, is that, let's say schematically I have this moduli space. So this represents, this box represents all the CR structures on S3. Just like on Riemann surfaces, you can parameterize by this famous diagram which looks like this. You might have seen this in standard textbooks of Riemann geometry, Riemann surface, something like this. For genus 1. So this is the moduli space. So this represents all the CR structures on S3. And here is like the standard structure. Now if I move in certain direction, like in the direction of the Rossi example, I don't embed. So there are some directions where I will embed. Some directions I embed. So this must be actually a very thin set. I mean, generically things are bad. So what is the description of this? Is this an analytic curve somewhere? Where is it smooth? Is it continuous? Can I join any two embeddable structures by a homotopy? I think hard problems. Okay. They're not easy. Actually, the converse is true. So here, I won't say completely the converse is true, but something of the converse is true. So you'll see why. Because what did I prove? I proved, you take any abstract guy. I didn't say that this comes from S3, it's a perturbation of something. I said, you take any abstract thing, these two conditions hold, I embed. Here I'm making a condition. Okay? So my condition is that I am on S3. I'm on S3 and I change the contact form this way by some function phi. This dot represents the point on the S3. So this is my new CR structure. And I assume that this CR structure is embedded in C2. For small deformations, if it's embedded, it will be embedded in C2. Large deformations, I don't know. It's a very hard problem. Then it turns out that if it is embedded, then the Panites operator for the new structure is not negative. It's not a fake condition that I use there to write down some theorem. Oh, I get some theorem. It's there. You have to deal with it. Okay? So I am not going to say again anything about the proof. Only thing I'm going to say is that this uses something called Lambert stability theorem. Difficult theorem. I think it was quoted in when he got the Bosman Prize. Okay, so now there's a related question here. You see, if you look at the kernel of the Panisse operator, you will find that it contains all CR pluriharmonic functions. So pluriharmonic means you take a holomorphic function and you take the real and imaginary parts. Those are the pluriharmonics. So the Panisse will kill that, just like D bar B kills all the holomorphic functions and characterizes it. That's it in the kernel of D bar B and box B, holomorphic functions. That's not true for the Panisse. There are more functions besides the pluriharmonics. I want to know exactly what they are. I don't think anybody knows that. Okay? The only situation I know exactly that they are the pluriharmonic functions is when the torsion is identically zero. Then I know. The kernel is exactly the pluriharmonic. I also want to know whether I have stability in the kernel. What do I mean by stability? Suppose I have a kernel function here. I deform the structure. Okay? Then given this kernel function here, I would like to find a function in the kernel here so that the two are closed when the deformation parameter is small. That is stability, stability of the kernel function. I would like to show that you have like a continuity in the sense, estimates and so on. It's like the version of Lampert stability theorem for CR functions. I'm not sure this has been done. And I'm not sure how hard it is, but it's presumably very hard because in some sense it will have to include this sort of result. Okay, so now I want to talk about some other condition. So you may be wondering, okay, what else is there? So this is two papers of Burns and Epstein in JAMS and John Bland. John Bland is from this university, right, Toronto. Right? So these two, they work together. So separately, what did they prove? So so to define this, I want to define HPQ, which is exactly the bigraded spherical harmonics. So you're in S3, which is a subset of C2. So the bigraded spherical harmonics are ZA, ZB bar, where the points in C2 are denoted as Z, W. And they are functions which are killed by the Laplacian. And you restrict these functions to S3. Now you take a function phi, which is C infinity of S3, and you expand by means of these bigraded harmonics. And their condition is that if you look at the Fourier coefficients, all Fourier coefficients which satisfy this criteria, they all vanish. Then I will say a function phi satisfies the Burns-Epstein condition. Okay? So their theorem is that if I perturb my structure this way, where phi satisfies the Burns-Epstein condition, then the structure embeds. So if and only. So here you have something involving Fourier series. Again, it's not CR invariant. Right? Also, their condition does not work on any manifold. What is spherical harmonics on an arbitrary manifold? What is it? I don't know. So you see, and they have to start from a standard structure and make a small perturbation. So what if I have a manifold and I don't have a standard structure? But yet you want to say something. How is this related to the Panisse? Okay. Well, we can put whatever I have said, all these equivalences, and then state the following theorem. Small deformation theorem. All these are equivalent formulations of C2. So here, this is Cohn, Joe Cohn. This and this is Burns-Epstein, and this is what our condition. Okay? So, first thing to note is that the Burns-Epstein condition fails for the Rossi example. It's phi is identically 1, P and Q are both 0. So you can check, Burns-Epstein Fourier coefficients are 0, and phi is a function 1. Also, what I just said, that the sufficiency theorem holds, our theorem, and our condition is non-perturbative. And you don't need S3 for an arbitrary manifold. So now you can ask me, okay, this is just Fourier coefficient. What does this have to do with Panites? You just showed Panites is equivalent to embedding, and they showed something. Then what is the link between your theorem and their theorem? Let me explain to you. So I have to tell you something about some very fine structures of this Panites operator. So what we did is that we played the following game. Okay, here's the eigenvalues. Okay. And so now if you perturb the structure, what is the danger? So you start with the three spheres. So the zero eigenvalue of the Panites on the standard structure of the three sphere is positive because as I explained to you, it has torsion zero. So I made a remark, P0 is always bigger than zero. So if you perturb this structure, the danger is that this kernel is not finite dimensional. It's infinite dimensional. It's a huge kernel. All the CR pluriharmonic functions are in there, sitting in the kernel. So this guy can come down. So this zero eigenvalue can generate a negative eigenvalue. That's the danger, right? The Panites can become negative. So what we did is that we took the Panites, okay, and we computed its second variation. And this is a long, long and tedious calculation. We want to see it. And we found that it is a sum of two pieces. So the idea is saddle. It's a Mohs theory I'm doing here. So you look at this D1 and then you almost want to jump off some big building or something. It's a mess. It's a long tensor. But something miraculous happens. You do lots of integration of parts and some miracle cancellations take place. This D1. Always one negative. So it does not come down when you make a small deformation. So the bad guy is here, if at all. But this you're only doing for the kernel, okay? So this is not proving for me anything more. It's just a calculation. So what do you do here? You look into this carefully. And so this guy corresponds to this unstable part of the functional coming down. And you look in it carefully and you see Bunge-Epstein is there. So if the Fourier coefficients vanish, then D2 becomes non-negative. So it becomes a local minima. So the idea is that now the second variation, the first variation vanishes, zero. So therefore the second variation becomes positive. So the hope is that the eigenvalues, when you make a deformation of the Panites, go up. So there is a link. So you can make a direct link. You don't have to go through Pohn or anything. You can make a direct link and you can see that this condition, which is non-geometric looking, is actually related to the geometry through the Mohs theory and the second variation of the Panites operator. Okay, I want to talk of some general relativity. What is the application of these things? So there's a long-term plan. So what I want to talk here about is the Pauchy-Mass theorem. So let me explain to you what the Pauchy-Mass theorem is from general relativity, then I'll talk in 1 minute about the CR Pauchy-Mass theorem. Okay, so here's what is happening. So this is the ADM mass. So you have a Riemannian manifold with a metric G. And this metric G has the property that asymptotically as you move towards infinity, this is a non-compact manifold, the metric becomes flat and flat. So ADM stands for Arnowitz, Deisser, and Meissner. This fat book of relativity, Meissner, Charles Meissner, Maryland, that same Meissner. So you see, there is no concept of mass in general relativity locally. Because why? You take the metric, you make a covariant derivative, in normal coordinates you have zero. So what is mass? So what you have is this notion that you take these covariant derivatives. This is a sphere of radius r. This is the normal to the sphere of radius r. And you take this r, let it go to infinity because of these conditions, this m exists. So this is called the ADM mass. And it's a famous theorem of Shane and Yao that if the scalar curvature is non-negative, then m is bigger or equal to 0. So why you need this? What is the big deal? Yeah, I have some theorem. What is it related to this audience? So let me explain. So So this is what is happening. So you see, in the proof of Rick Shane for the Yamabe problem, which he eventually solved, one of the fundamental facts is the following. So you take the Laplacian on the manifold, and you add the scalar curvature. So this is a conformal, and there's some constant here which I never remember. But there is some 5 or 6 or 3 over 5 or something. So this is a conformally invariant guy. You change the metric by a conformal factor, and the conformal factor pops out. Just like Hirachi's transformation law, that's conformally invariant. So what you need is that you want to somehow show that the Yamabe constant of the manifold is less than the Yamabe constant of S3. The Yamabe constant of S3 is exactly the Sobolev, your beloved familiar Sobolev constant in R3, with some power. So what do you go about doing? So you have a functional there, and you want to say that. So somehow when you and so when you are below here, you can show that in the variational formulation of the problem, you have a minimizing sequence. Otherwise, you have loss of compactness, and the flow line goes off to plus infinity. So you look at the Green's function of this guy. You take a point, x0. 0 on the manifold, and you make some Green's function in local coordinates. So this is dimension 3, so you have this. And then there is an x term, which is actually a number a, and da da da. What you want to know is the sign of the Green's function. You want to know whether a is positive, negative, and so on. And what Rick Shane observed is that his previous work with Yao allowed him to show that if the scalar curvature is positive, this guy a is positive. So the mass is reflected in the expansion of the Green's function. And once you do that, then you're done. There is work here. I'm just trying to say it in a short way. Now you want to do the same thing for the CR case. So what is the CR Yamabe problem? So this was started by Jerison and Lee. So you take a contact form modified by conformal factor, and then you want this new contact form to have Webster curvature constant. So the version of this guy will be box B, delta B. Delta B will be x squared plus y squared, real and imaginary parts of the holomorphic vector field. So there are missing cases in Jerison and Lee. So they really didn't prove this. They didn't prove this because there are some situations. So they really prove, I would say, what Aubin did. This part of Rick Shane, they don't get it because they don't have a positive mass theorem. And you see the reason why they don't have, because you have an arbitrary manifold, abstract manifold. You want to do the construction of Rick Shane, but then you have to put this in C2. And so what you want to do here is you want to look at the Green's function, and the Green's function will have some expansion. And here this will be a square, I believe, because q minus 2 and q is 4. And then there will be an x term. So you want to say this. So if you know in information about some CR version of the positive mass theorem, where being flat at infinity will be replaced by being flat, by being Heisenberg at infinity. That will be the equivalent thing. Then you would like to say that this thing is going to be bigger than 0 if the Webster curvature is positive. So now this is the first step, because these guys, and there's also Polam Young involved in this somewhere, you can take this abstract manifold with this condition, shove it in C2, and then do all your blow-up analysis. So I think this was stopping them for many years. But now, and remember, sufficient condition, I'm not saying it has to be a small perturbation, it has to be this manifold. So it's tailor-made, because you take this abstract manifold and these conditions, they are invariant conditions. They don't change if you change the contact form, which becomes important here. Because you are changing here, in this problem you are changing here. So you don't want these conditions to change. You see here that, one should not think of this as being a new approach, another way of doing embedding. No, there is this geometry involved which respects what you are trying to do for other geometric problems. It's not like doing functional analysis or something. Thank you so much.